if you're interested in some winter sunshine. Off the Ball is heading for some top-class golf next November, and you are most certainly invited to join us. The OTB crew, along with special guests Kevin Kilbane, Kieran Donaghy, Peter Lawrie and more, are taking on two of the best courses on the planet, the Yas Links and the National, for the first ever Off the Ball Open, which is on this November. It'll be 5 nights in a 4-star hotel. There'll be a Peter Lawrie golf clinic. There'll be a gala dinner and an OTB roadshow as well. November 17th to 23rd are the dates in Abu Dhabi. And if that sounds like your kind of thing, then you can sign up now at offtheball.com/open. We are turning to preview the US Open, which is on at Pebble Beach, which already adds a sense of gravitas to the whole occasion. We're back at Pebble Beach for the first time since Graham McDowell's win there in 2010. And Rory McIlroy very suddenly is the form player. He won by 7 shots in Canada, I'm sure you saw. He had a weekend of 64 and 61. It is a 16th PGA Tour title at 30 years of age for Rory, which is no bad thing. He is back up to number 3. In the world where he belongs, and on Sunday in particular, he was awesome.
He doesn't seem to be letting off the gas pedal.
Starting right here.
What a great wedge shot there for Rory. Control the distance.
Amazing.
Oh, you've got to be joking.
What a shot, Peter. He stuck the finish again. Just perfect.
Absolutely. He's going to make that to go to 10 under par for the day. And we are still on 59 watch. Rory McIlroy, our leader.
So close.
Nothing can diminish what we saw here today. Absolutely magnificent. McIlroy, the 2019 RBC Canadian Open champion.
Shoot, I had a chance to shoot 59. I'm sort of a little sorry for being disappointed up here, but I had a chance. I played 17 wonderful holes. I was 10 under through 17 holes, and you know, I shot 4 under on the back nine with 2 bogeys, so that was pretty good too, I guess. But I'm playing well, you know. I've found a little groove and I want to just keep it going. I think this time it's more of an affirmation of what I can do when I play with complete freedom, like I did today, or like I've done over the weekend. You know, even like that Players' Championship, I sort of had to grind it out. You know, conditions were tough. You know, you're sort of just hanging on. You're playing it into the right spots, and you're, you know, I felt like this week it was just, you know, I was free. I just, you know, I trusted myself 100%, and I hit the shots when I needed to. And you know, it's almost like you're out of your own body and looking at yourself play. That's sort of, and for sometimes today, that's how it felt. So if I could bottle that feeling and take it with me week to week, I would. But it sort of comes and goes, and it's just a matter of being confident with your game and everything sort of falling into place. So, you know, it fell into place today for me, and hopefully I can keep that going for the rest of the year.
And on we go to Pebble Beach. Paul McGinley will be watching with the Sky Sports team at Pebble. He is somewhere in the Monterey Peninsula. You're there, Paul?
I am, Joe. How are you? I am lucky to be here, all right.
It's a tough gig, but someone has to do it. Nice part of the world.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward. I'm actually playing Cypress Point this afternoon, so I'm looking forward to that.
If I'm not mistaken, you mentioned at the Lahinch Media Day that Cypress Point is your favourite golf course in the world.
Yeah, it is. I've been lucky to play it a number of times, and yeah, for everything, for design, for aestheticness, beauty. It's fun, you know. It's not one of those golf courses that, you know, you come off thinking, man, I played great and I shot 72. You know, you come off thinking, you know, you can shoot a 65, 66 around there, but there's also a lot of challenges too, and you can shoot 75, 76, certainly at my level. So that's what's such a fun about it. It's just a lovely, lovely place to be, lovely environment and a great design.
Good. Well, everybody in their cars right now driving home in the traffic hates you, so we'll move on. Rory McIlroy, the weekend in particular, this was this was awesome.
It was, you know, it's a while since we've seen that. You know, I've called it pointy elbows a number of times with you over the last couple of years, and we saw the pointy elbows again. He went out and he won the tournament. He grabbed it by the scruff of the neck and he rolled off into the sunset. You know, it's a while since we've seen that, and it was refreshing and good to see. You know, and, you know, people within the game, me included, and you know, you hear a saying all the time, and people are probably fed up saying it. You know, that McIlroy's got another gear that others don't have, and that's exactly what we mean. He's got that ability to win by six or seven shots that not a lot of other players do. You know, Tiger, yeah, he won a few times by quite big margins, but you know, you take the Dustin Johnsons and those kind of guys, they don't seem to win by six or seven shots. You know, they seem to win by two or three and really good performances, and that's what makes McIlroy different, and that's why he's so highly regarded within the game.
As you say, it's been a while since we've seen him really put on the afterburners like this, and it was one of the great kind of maxims in golf for a number of years there that if Rory McIlroy played his best, then he could beat anybody in the world, no question. His best game was better than anybody else's best game, and through a combination of him not playing that well for a time and others improving and really progressing with their games, we weren't so sure, even if McIlroy's best was good enough against the very best, that the other top players might produce. Now, who knows if it is or not? It's probably closer than ever, but it's a psychological reminder, I would think, at a very good time for the rest of the field that, hey, when I play my best, Rory McIlroy, when I play my best, it can be this good. And there's no harm him sowing that seed this week.
Yeah, I mean, I take that point, and that point has been debated by a number of people over the years. When he's at his best, he's the best. And I think that's subjective, Joe, and I think there's a couple of things why I'd say that. First of all, if the conditions suit Rory, then yes, you know, I mean, you look at he's won 25 times as a professional. Every time has been 12 under or better his winning score. You know, he doesn't win on really tough golf courses. He wins when conditions are soft and you know, you can take on the golf course and he can use his enormous length off the tee, bring a golf course to its knees. His short game has really improved, certainly this year. And he can dominate a golf course like that. You know, to win the way that Graham McDowell won in 2010 around Pebble Beach, we haven't seen that element to him. So to say that he's at his best, yeah, if certain conditions are aligned, I think that's the case. But it has to be those kind of conditions. And, you know, to beat a really complete player, you know, winning in a tough dogfight on a really tough golf course like Pebble Beach is something that he hasn't achieved so far, even though he's achieved most other things in the sport.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Something else I wanted to pick your brain on. He was talking about this week, he put an extra wedge in the bag. He had a fourth wedge in the bag, and sometimes that's been an issue for him. Nick Faldo, for instance, I heard a couple of weeks ago saying that one of the reasons he thinks McIlroy hasn't quite won at Augusta is he doesn't have absolute distance control over his wedges. That, you know, there's a touch of inconsistency there. It was interesting, he put a fourth wedge in the bag this week and seemed to really kind of be stitching the ball in that department. What were you seeing there?
Well, I've seen it all year, Joe, to be honest, and having followed him and watched him closely, I see a huge improvement in his performance level this year, not just in terms of his results, but in his performance throughout the bag. And his wedge play has got a lot of criticism over the years, and me included last year. You know, his distance control was nowhere near where it needed to be. Since this introduction of Brad Faxon, I'll go back to it again, I've been harboring on about it now for quite a while, he's got a different approach to the game. He's looked at what's important in terms of scoring. His putting has gone to another level. He put it unbelievably last week, the bit that I saw, and also statistics-wise, you can see that. His wedge play, his chipping, I mean, these things have all really gone to another level. It's not often now that you see him really hit a bad wedge shot. In fact, he hits a number of really good wedge shots, and I don't know if you watched the golf last week, but the way he dismantled that first hole to get off to a fast start, particularly at the weekend, and he had tricky pitch shots in on both occasions, and he damn near holed both of them. You know, and these were from 60, 70 yards over bunker, not a lot of green to work with. You know, that's a lot of confidence, it's a lot of skill, and it's also a lot of practice to be able to execute those, something he hasn't done in the past. So yes, he's always been a long straight driver, and that's always been an element to him, but the real reason why he's gone to another level in the last few months and why he dominated is the difference in his short game.
Has he done anything technically different with those kind of 120 yard in shots?
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, you need to speak to Brad Faxon. Hopefully I'll see Brad this week and I'll try to get a little bit more out of what's happening. And but it's hard to say because you're just watching on TV. But certainly there's a lot of spin on the shots when they come in. And it's his distance control, you know, the ability to play a 40, 50 yard shot up in the air and stop it very quickly. You know, that's been hugely impressive. And his putting looks, you know, he said that there in his interview you just played. He looks free. He looks uninhibited. He looks like he's bouncing along and looking forward, hitting the next putt and hitting the next shot. He's not afraid of things. And, you know, that's the mindset that he always has played his best golf in. And it's nice to see him back to those, you know, that kind of mindset. And again, I really do think that Brad Faxon, who is a disciple, as I said before, of Bob Rutello, who's regarded and renowned in the game as the best sports psychologist. So I think he's getting not just a lot of help with his short game from a technical point of view. Mm. I think he's getting a lot of mental advice as well. Really good, sound mental advice, test and proven with so many of the great players, Paddy Carrington included, that that Bob Rutello would have taught throughout their careers.
With other players, if they won in that fashion, you might worry about them replicating it the following week. There is an emotional drain and there is an energy drain when you win. McIlroy seems to be the opposite to most players in that regard. He seems to ride momentum. He was talking about 2014 when he went on that famous run, and he said, I didn't really celebrate any of those wins too much. And he said, especially the WGC into the PGA at Valhalla, he said, it was almost as if I was playing an 8-round tournament, and that's how I feel here. And by all accounts, he flew straight to California on Sunday night, business as usual. He can win in fits and bursts more than a lot of players.
Yeah, he can, Joe. And he was out practicing with Brad Faxon on Monday here at the golf course in right. Pebble Beach. So, yeah, I can see all that. I think he's a confidence player. We've always said that. Yes, that's a huge big factor in his favour. He's playing great. That's a huge big factor in his favour. But I'll go back to the point I made at the start there. This is not a wide open golf course that's going to really benefit bringing it to its knees and ripping it off the tee and overpowering it. Like he did in Canada last week. This is a very, very different skill set around here. Mm. It's going to require something very different. Probably with his length, you might only see him hit 4 or 5 drivers because there's nowhere to hit driver in a lot of the holes. The fairways are incredibly narrow. And because the fairways are so small and slopey, you nearly need to have control of the ball going into these greens. Mm. And you can only do that from the fairway. So you will see him probably play much more conservative than he did last week, which the point I made earlier, again, it's not normally the style of golf that he seems to revel in. So this is why it's a really big test for him. Yes, things are going great and he's playing wonderfully well,
yeah.
But he's facing a very, very different test this week. Not alone take away all the psychology of it being a major and trying to win a major, but in terms of the skill set that his game is suited to, this is not one that you would say is a Rory McIlroy golf course. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he performs and how he tackles the challenge that Pebble Beach is going to pose this week.
US Opens at Pebble Beach have produced great winners. You know, famously, Jack in 72, Tom Watson in 82, Tom Kite in 92, Tiger in 2000 when he was just iconically phenomenal, and Graham McDowell in 2010. Like, Kite and GMAC wouldn't be big hitters, which ties in with your point. So where does Brooks Koepka then fit into that? You know, he's going for a third US Open on the trot, hasn't been done since 1905. Like, he's kind of in the midst of doing something historical anyway with his 4 majors wins in his last 8. So as you've said, it's a course about strategy, and it's not just check out your brain and reach for the driver every time. He's going to have to think his way around. He's up to that, I presume, Koepka, or would you share similar concerns to McIlroy at Pebble?
Yeah, I mean, I think the style of the golf course, Joe, brings so many people into it. I mean, you take somebody like, let's go extreme, let's go Jim Furyk. Jim Furyk's the shortest hitter on the PGA Tour. You put him in Bethpage, there was absolutely no chance in the world that he was going to, never mind win, become in the top 10, because every odd was against him. That's not the case here. This is about fairways, it's about distance control with the irons, and there's not many better than Jim Furyk. I know that's an extreme case, but you have so many guys in the middle who are really brought into the equation now, that weren't brought into the equation in Bethpage. So we've seen Brooks before. Mentally, he's able to be very stoic in tough conditions. He's reveled in tough conditions before. This is going to be a really challenge, real challenge for him. But the big key, the interesting thing, the elephant in the room here is what the USGA are going to do in terms of setting up the golf course. There was a very controversial piece written in Golf Digest in the last couple of months. You might have read it, where a lot of the players went anonymous and they were talking about the USGA and the setup and how much they screwed up over the years and what they've done. And some players were threatening that they would boycott it if they got it wrong, and they shouldn't get Pebble Beach wrong, because if they get this wrong, there's going to be some serious problems in the game and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think the USGA are going to be sensitive to that criticism. Mike Davies, who used to run the PGA or run the USGA for the last number of years, he's moved sideways. Somebody else has come in. And I can see the course being a little bit softer in terms of setup than what we'd expected in those past US Opens that have been played around here. There's not a lot of wind forecast this week. It's going to be quite mild. It's in the 60s every day. And I can see greens being kept a little bit soft and them trying to avoid criticism. Now, should they do all of those things, that now all of a sudden plays back into the style of Rory and back into the style of Brooks Koepka, because then with softer greens, they will take it and play it a lot more aggressively. So I think a lot is going to depend on how they set up the golf course and whether this wind blows or not, dries out the greens, because there's no way for certain, no way in the world that you can win a US Open around here playing from the rough and trying to hit driver everywhere.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating. I was reading they may have to syringe the greens, which is quite rare. Jordan Spieth was saying they're the best greens he's put it on in a long time, the Poana greens there. But the conditions, as you said, are very fair across the week, and they will dry out, and they may have to syringe them, which is unusual. I don't fully understand the science of syringing them, but they're conscious of not getting away from them.
Yeah, I mean, again, Joe, that's just about, I think that's, they're trying to, what they wanted, what the USGA, I would say is they're trying to tiptoe the way through this week and not screw up and not lose the support of the players. So the best way of doing that is to make it as relatively easy, to be quite honest. Slow down the greens a little bit, make them a little bit soft. I'm not saying to make it really easy, but, you know, just be a little bit more generous than what they would normally do in past US Opens played around here. So if they do that, that will play back into the guys' hands, the bigger hitters' guys. If they don't, if they say, no, we're going to stand up to these players and we're going to do like we've always done before, and the wind blows a little bit, and, you know, then all of a sudden the GMAX and you know, the guys who have performed on these style of golf courses, the Tom Kites, are going to come through, because, you know, no matter how good you play around here, the greens are so small, and if they get firm, you're not going to hit any more than 12 or 13 greens. There's a huge reliance on the short game. And, you know, the dog fighters and street fighters, like a Tom Kite was, and who's won around here, and like a Tom Watson was, who's won around here, and like a GMAC was, who's won around here, are going to come to the fore. So much is going to be dependent on the USGA and how they set up the golf course.
That's it's a fascinating point, and it'll be interesting to see what they do. I hope they hold their nerve. I hope they preserve some of the identity of the US Open here, and that the GMAC still have a chance in this, because I suspect the USGA are so chastened by Erin Hills, where there was no wind when they needed it and it was wide open and not very good. Chambers Bay, the greens were a disaster. Last year, several of the greens got away from them. They'll definitely want to avoid that again. There was the Dustin Johnson mistake over, you know, whether or not he was going to lose a shot in 2016. Adam Scott, generally a mild-mannered fellow, was saying there hasn't been a good US Open. And when he says good, he means in the way it was put together and run. He said there hasn't been a good US Open since Pinehurst in 2014. So I dare say they'll err on the side of caution, unfortunately, but I understand human nature. Talk to us about Tiger in the midst of Pebble Beach, because everything you're saying here sounds pretty good from a Tiger point of view.
Yeah, I really fancy Tiger this week, particularly if they hold a nerve and they set it up like a proper US Open should be. Because I agree with you in all of those points. They should stick to their DNA. It's okay, and it's okay to have a golf tournament that's different and not a generic PGA Tour setup where, you know, 12, 15, 20 under par wins. Let the guys battle for level par. Make it really tough. Make the greens firm. Make a premium on hitting the fairways and not overpowering it from the rough. I hope they do that. If they do that, there's not many better people in the game, in the history of the game. Nicklaus is obviously up there, who's as good at course management as Tiger Woods. If that is the case, nobody's as good playing on the back foot as Tiger Woods. We all talk about playing on the front foot, and McIlroy is the best in the world at playing on the front foot. Playing on the back foot when the golf course and the conditions are so difficult, that's a different style of play, and Tiger's brilliant at playing that style of golf. And secondly, it also plays into his skill set. You know, he's no longer a Brooks or certainly like he was when he won in 2000, where he was the longest hitter in the field. He's certainly not the case anymore. So his skill set is different now. It's more about irons, distance control. That's why he was able to win around Augusta, because that was also a second shot golf course, and controlling your shots into the very small greens and the slopes on the greens and controlling the spin in, just like it is here in Pebble Beach. So I do fancy him. I'd be really surprised if he's not in contention, Tiger Woods. No matter what the conditions, I think he'll figure out a way of getting around here and being in the shakeup.
Well, right away then, we have a great tournament. You know, in 2000, when he was, 12 under and won by 15 shots, and Ernie Els, who finished second, walked off the 18th and quipped to reporters, well, I won the tournament I was in. Was that as dominant a performance as we've ever seen by an individual at any major ever that you can remember?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's well regarded within the game as being so. The shots he displayed that week, the power he showed, and the ability with the putter that he showed, it all kind of combined together. And you know, it's a little bit like Brooks Koepka in Bethpage a few weeks ago. You know, when he got ahead, he wanted to extend his lead and extend it and run off into the sunset. And that's what made him a great front runner. You know, his big goal with, I think, a 6 or 7 shot lead start in the last round was not to make a bogey, not to give the other guys a sniff or a chance of coming back. Now, I know Brooks made a few mistakes and let the guys back in and Beth Page, but certainly Tiger was very good at minimizing mistakes once he had the lead and letting the other guys trying to catch him. And he had that intimidation factor because not alone was he not making mistakes, they knew he was not going to make mistakes. So they were playing under a lot of pressure as a result.
Interestingly, I saw him talking about it recently and he was saying he didn't actually go at flags very often at all across the 4 days, just picked parts of greens, portion, you know, the right part of the green to land it on. You know, for such a brilliant score, he actually didn't feel he was playing that aggressively with his iron play, but it just shows you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what you can do, and that's what you've got to do around here. You know, you miss it in the right place. I mean, just for people who are going to watch it on TV this week, I mean, I've played here so many times. I went to college in California. I'm familiar with the surroundings and this area and the golf course and the grasses and all the stuff around it. And, you know, Tawana is actually not a bad grass this time of year because it's fully bloomed and it's you know, you heard, as you said, Jordan there, saying the greens are very good. Just for people watching on TV, just a little example. 17 is probably going to be the toughest par 3 in the course, one of the toughest holes on the course because they play a different tee than they do for the AT&T, and it plays at about 220 yards into a tiny green that's really narrow, slopes from back to front. And at the weekend, the pin's going to be, there's two portions to the green. It's going to be in the back left portion where famously Tom Watson chipped in for. Now, the one place you cannot hit it is where Tom Watson hit it. Now, he got lucky and he chipped in, but his chip was going 15, 20 feet past if it wasn't in, and Nicklaus may well have been the winner. But although it was a great chip, it still went in the hole, and luckily it did. Otherwise, as I say, it would have been 20 foot past. But in terms of playing that, you're much better off in the bunker than you are 2 yards over the back. The bunker short leaves you a straightforward uphill bunker shot. Most players are going to get up and down from there. So that's what Tiger Woods is referring to when he talks about where to miss it and where to err on. So if you're between kind of a 3-iron and a 4-iron, rather than thinking, yeah, I'm going to hit a 3-iron and take on the green, I say, you know, I'll hit a 4. If I smash it, I'll get on the green and I'll be fine. But if I don't, I'll be in that front bunker. And once it doesn't plug, I'm going to be okay. And that's just a little example there of what I think Tiger was referring to in the point you just made.
That's a hell of a hole, isn't it? That's Jack's 1-iron in 72 as well, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was 1-iron into the wind. The prevailing wind comes in off the ocean there. So generally it plays into the wind as well. Okay. And it's a very narrow green. Joe, and again, going back to the setup, if the USGA soften the greens and syringe them and make them a little bit soft, well, that's fine. You can hit it. These guys are so good now. They can use the wind as a backstop and they can fire it up in the air with a 3 or a 4 iron and be able to stop it on that green. But if that green gets caked, if it gets firm and fast, well, that's when course management comes in. That's when you're on the tee, you need to think, wow, the chances of hitting it on this green and keeping it on this green are so slim that I'm going to play the percentages here and make sure that I don't hit it over the back of the green. And I'm going to put it in that front bunker. And that's what Nicklaus talks about when he went around here. And that's what Woods talks about when they went around here. And they're the guys to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, there's not too many better than those two.
The more you talk, the more I really hope they do hold their nerve. One last player just to ask about, Shane Lowry, tied second in Canada. He's up to 32nd in the world now. He's put together a very decent run. Any idea why?
I don't know why. I think, you know, I said it before a long time as well. You know, Shane is such a good player. I mean, you know, just watching him as a pure golfer, there's not many guys as good as him. I look at Shane's game, I don't see a weakness. He's a great driver of the ball. He hits it a million miles. He's a great iron player. He's an unbelievable putter when he gets confident, like he showed last week. He put it unbelievable last week. And his best part of his game is his chipping. So I look at his game and I don't see a weakness. And I'm not surprised to see him playing at this level. He's had a first, a second, and a third already this year. I think there's only about a dozen players who've earned more world ranking points than him since the 1st of January. And it's no surprise. And unfortunately, because he kind of lives a little bit in the shadow of Rory McIlroy, everybody's compared to Rory McIlroy, certainly in an Irish context, that he doesn't get the credit for how good a golfer he actually is. He really is a strong player and made of really stern stuff as well. You know, to win the Irish Open as an amateur, I mean, Christ, I don't care how good, you know, Darren might have been or Rory might have been when we played and when I played as an amateur in the Irish Open, the idea of winning it was absolutely no way could any of us even entertain winning it. So that's the kind of caliber of golfer you're talking about when you talk about Shane Lowry. So this is no surprise to see him playing this good. This is not just having a good run. This is the kind of quality of player that he's capable of being.
Okay, listen, fantastic stuff. Say, since you were last on, John Rahm is coming to La Hinch. He's worth the entrance fee alone. That's a great one.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. John's been great, to be honest. We've had him pretty much from day one. He always said, yeah, you know what, I probably will, almost certainly. Don't want to say it yet, but yeah. I probably will. And so we kind of coaxed him along and we stayed close to him and marked him. And his agent has been great. They've been absolutely 100% honest and straight from day one. And they've been a delight to work with, certainly from my point of view. And it's great to get him over the line. Unfortunately, he's lost a little bit of form in the last month or two. And I'd like to see him coming back to form a little bit because he's got, you know, you pick all the young players in the world, you know, yeah. There's so many of them. You know, Schofield's another guy to look out for this week, who'll be a strong contender. But John Rahm is to me looks like, again, like Shane. I look at him and I see no weakness. Just a little bit more experience and a little bit more patience when he gets in the heat is all that's required, and that will come with playing more. So yeah, he's a really good addition, strong field, and a great affinity with Ireland. If Ireland has been good to him, he's played well around the Irish Opens in the past, and of course he won up near Portrush a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I followed him around Port Stewart that week, and it was frightening. So he'll be a great addition to the field. Listen, in the face of adversity, like watching the US Open at Pebble and playing Cypress Point, just try and stay stoic, do your best, you know, keep a level head. You know, we all have our own demons to fight. You take care of yourself today, okay?
Okay, Joe. Well, just to put it in perspective, I've been up at 2:30 this morning, just so you know, okay? So,
oh, well, listen, terrible.
And I've been working all morning, so I feel like I had to put a day's work in and visit the golf course and get a feeling for what was going on and do a bit of my prep. So I can go with a clear conscience now and enjoy the beauty of Cyprus. It's an absolute stunning day here. It's in the mid-70s. There's 5-mile-an-hour wind, and we got a tee time at 12:30. So.
Oh, magic. Right, enjoy.
I got a good friend of mine from Dublin over with me, and boy, is he excited.
I can imagine. Okay, listen, thanks a million. We really appreciate it, by the way. Thanks.
All right. You're welcome, Joe. All the best. See ya.
Cheers. Paul McGinley there. Ahead of the US Open at Pebble. It should be a really brilliant couple of days. The next time the US Open back at Pebble is 2027, so enjoy this one while you can. The men's, that is. I think the women are back there in 2-3 years' time.